Oh. That's so cool. So cool.
Batter up. This is the Bureau podcast from the cage, and it's a quite noisy cage as well. The baseball cage, that is. Yep, we're on location here at Vietnam's first automatic baseball cage in Ho Chi Minh City's District 7. Whoop, whoop. Thank you for listening and watching wherever you are. We're also filming the episode today, and you can find the video on our YouTube channel. Just search The Bureau Asia, and it should hit you in the face like a fastball if you're not watching carefully. Make a comment, give it a like, and share to your friends so they can see our content too.
Make it a home run, right?
Yeah.
And we've got an angle grinder going somewhere over the back of the cage there as well. While we're at it, don't forget to subscribe while you're there so you don't strike out on anything exciting on the Bureau Asia channels. And a disclaimer of sorts today before we get underway. Your listening experience might be a little bit different from usual. As you'll notice today, we've got more of a live stream vibe happening.
We've got girls at the moment in the cage hitting some balls. We've got neighbors with
an
angle grinder.
What did you just say, Mel? Is that legal? Is that legal? So, you might hear some unusual sounds, noises, grimaces, and perhaps even some cries for help from both sides of the cages.
Oh, right, speaking by us of here. Boats, there is a canal, like, just at the back of this area, and we actually heard a little bit, like, boat sounds.
Yeah, that's right. And some guy with an angle grinder.
Everything's happening.
Anyway, let us know what you think. Do you like it? Do you not like it? Should we do some live streaming in the future? It's something we've been tossing up doing for a while now, so we'd like to hear what you think. Let us know on any of our social channels at The Bureau Asia, or even better still, scroll down past the show notes if you're listening on Spotify, and you'll find our poll and Q&A section.
It's actually a pretty cool poll. Like the functionality.
It's a good little function, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a cool little functionality on Spotify and Anchor as well. Yeah.
Oh, and pretty soon Spotify will be able to do like the video podcast as
Like
well.
Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So that'll be really good. So you will have worked out already, today's a sporty theme. Look around. Andy's got the Guernsey on there, the Maroons.
I got my shoes on.
Yep. And in addition to introducing you to this wonderful place here, we're going to chat a little bit about some lesser-known sports that are played here in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. After that, we chat to Aussie pro triathlete Tim Van Berkel.
Yay!
Before the pandemic, was a regular competitor at Ironman 70.3 Vietnam in Da Nang. In fact, he took out the title in 2017 and came second in 2016 and 2018.
Wow.
We were there. We saw him in the finish line.
Yep. And back in 2014, he finished seventh in the biggest race of them all, the Ironman World Championship at Kona in Hawaii.
Nice. Great coffee there. Kona coffee.
And I should have cued the Hawaiian music. The Calypso kind of, So anyway, look forward to that. Tim's an absolute champ for agreeing to talk to us today. So he's up shortly. Speaking of champions, let's introduce a couple of them sitting alongside me on the bench here, or should I call it the bullpen? It's Mel and Andy. How are you guys?
Hey, what's going on?
Yeah.
It's been a week. Hello.
I kind of screwed things up a little bit, but I still have the walk-up songs for you guys. So,
okay.
You want to cut that?
Yeah.
Because they were kind of cool.
Now, we need a new one, though.
Oh, I've got a couple of different ones.
Oh, okay.
They're baseball themed.
Okay.
The first one is for Mel.
All right. Okay.
All right, here we go.
I hope we can hear it.
Ooh.
Is this for me?
This is for you, Mel.
Is this like from a baseball movie theme?
It's from YouTube.
Take me out to the ball game.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Is this for me?
Yeah.
All right. All good and ready here. Let's play ball. It sounds like a NASCAR song, though, more than a baseball song.
It kind of fits, though, doesn't
it? Yeah, it feels like I'm in the South.
Yeah, like a NASCAR. Yeah.
Just needs a Confederate flag and then we're set. No, kidding.
I should have checked beforehand that we didn't have
any.
No,
we don't have any.
Okay, so that was Mel's walk-up song.
Right. And, I'm excited. What's mine?
Okay,
what's mine?
This is yours, Andy. I'll just turn it up a little bit. I'm just wondering whether you can pick it.
Who is this? This is my co-host, Bob Wudukubo. Bob, say hi. Hey, guys. This got a reggae feel to it.
Never heard of it.
It's Nelly. It's called Batter Up.
Never heard of it.
That flopped. Anyway, guys, how are you?
Good.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good.
All good?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. All good. I feel very sporty, even though I'm wearing rubber shoes. Yeah, things are good. I'm pretty excited, ready to do this podcast with my pitcher over here and our shortstop over there.
Okay.
Does that make me the catcher?
No, yeah, I'm the catcher.
What's a shortstop?
Okay.
Oh, the shortstop is the one who, like, if there's somebody bunting, maybe, then he's like...
Must be like the silly mid-off or whatever in cricket. Yeah.
But actually, the last time the two of you stood next to each other, Matt, you were shorter than Andy. Is that like a sign of old age?
I think Andy's
shrinking.
Yeah, he wears lifts.
Yeah.
Do you shrink?
I do shrink in some departments.
like George Costanza, right?
Yeah, when you're in the swimming pool.
It was cold.
The shrinkage.
So what do you think about this place, you two?
Pretty good? Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, you know, it's nifty. I like, obviously, the decorations, except, I don't know, maybe later we'll take a video and we can include it in our video podcast version. But there's actually a German guy drinking beer right like where we are right here.
It's above the camera.
Not a real one.
No,
it's a painting.
So I think that's the only thing that was like kind of off theme, but everything's good. So the audio of our podcast is a bit canny, like it sounds like a can.
Yeah. Well, that's, I guess that's the
it's a cool
outdoor
effect.
Yeah.
It would be part of the effect.
So I like it. It's got high ceilings, you know. We've got fans all over the place, so maybe that also contributes.
We've got the angle grinder.
Yeah. The angle grinder's
all real. It's all real. We probably should have live streamed it.
Yeah, the authentic the authentic experience, right?
Yeah.
I think if we can get through this in one piece, we'll be able to do it anywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
So yeah, I like the airiness of it because for a sports bar, most of the clientele would be smoking.
Yep.
So I'm not a smoker. I have asthma. So I like it if there's a breeze that, you know, just circulates. And this is a perfect place for that kind of situation.
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing that Meldon mentioned, there's a batting cage.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's four. Really?
Yeah. There's a batting cage and it's like depending on which speed you want. So you can choose. So if you're on a date, it's really awesome. You can act like you know what you're doing just a little bit better than your date. From like cage one to cage four.
Yeah.
All have different speeds, which is cool.
Yeah, the first one's 70 k's an hour. So that's 43 miles per hour for our American friends.
And then the...
which is pretty easy. 70 k's an hour, easy.
The fastest one is like 100.
Yeah, it's 100 k's. Yeah.
100 k's.
Yeah. So if the date doesn't go too well, Andy, you throw them in the 100 k, you know, later on.
Yeah, exactly. No, but it's cool. Like, actually, the funny thing, as a recording, right, we... Like, do we know that Japan is actually number one ranked in the world?
Are they?
Yeah.
I knew that they were crazy about baseball. Yeah.
I mean,
but
all the, you know, like the ex-American or like, you know, the ones that didn't go to the big league, like the minor leaguers, they get recruited to be imports in the Japanese league.
And it's a different season too. So I think the Japanese season is the off-season for the States. So they can play continuously.
But if you look at the, like, doing some stats, right? America's number four.
Wow.
Yeah.
What happened there?
I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe it's like the English with their football.
No. It's like New Zealand with their rugby. If you take away all of the players from the islands, just people from New Zealand, they wouldn't be ranked as high.
Oh, so the US league is full of Central and South Americans or something.
No, I guess
Cuba,
it's
A-Rod, stuff like that.
So Japan, Korea, one and two, and then Chinese Taipei.
No way.
Is number three.
Wow. Up the ranks.
Yeah.
Oh,
Number four is what? USA. Australia is number seven. And, well, you know.
Australia is seven.
Yeah.
So how many nations actually play this sport? So
there's
85 nations that are ranked at the moment. So come on, Vietnam. If Vietnam just enters in, you would actually technically rank higher than the men's football team, which is like ranked at 98?
Yeah, they're
on the scale.
What
about South
Korea?
Yeah, South Korea is number two.
Because here in Vietnam, the majority of the players who are into baseball are South Koreans.
Yeah,
that's right. Now, we've all had some time to look around and we've been out there in the cages slugging balls.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the highlights for you in the cage?
Well, this is actually our third time here. Yeah. So we did a recce like two times. The second time we did a recce, I tried hitting some of these balls and my thongs fell apart.
So, okay, you better explain about
the thong. To our American listeners who are into baseball, a thong is not an undergarment. It's a flip-flop.
You know, you should have put the thong song. Like,
oh, yeah.
You should have queued that up.
A bit slow.
On Drew Hill.
Yeah, so, yeah. Look, I don't think I'm fit enough to, like, try it again. It's just...
You can do plenty of bunting. You could do a bunt.
A bunting.
That's all right.
Oh, yeah. Bunt. Just put your arms out there and just wait for it.
You know, just a little tap.
What about you, Andy?
Yeah,
did you like it?
I like it. I mean, like, you guys came, like, we came here to have a look at it last time earlier this week, and it was my first time. To be quite honest, I'm not a baseball fan at all, but it's actually because it has the cages and it invites you to actually want to give it a go.
Yep.
And so you end up having fun. And, you know, I mean, I feel really rusty, obviously, with the hand-eye coordination. You feel super rusty. And also, you know, your arms kind of feel tight as well after trying to slug it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, it's really good. And
like, you can sit here and have a beer.
You don't
have to do it if you don't want to.
And also, like Mel said, like people don't smoke here. So it's really actually really cool to bring a couple of mates.
Mm-hmm.
It's in D7, so it's actually not far.
Yeah, we should explain where it is, I suppose.
It's in the middle of District 4 and, well...
It's
nearer District 4.
It's near Lotte Mart.
If you know where Lotte Mart is.
Yeah.
So it's actually pretty cool. Like, think about it this way. Like, it's in a fairly local area of D7 in a sense. It's just over like this little, you go over this bridge where there's like a little,
past the swamp.
Yeah, past the swamp. I was going to say river. I was going to be nice.
Yeah,
just a little stream it runs through. And then then you get to this place and I think it's been open since I was talking to the owner. It's been open since, March earlier this year.
Yeah, but then COVID hit and they had to close. So that's unfortunate.
Well, it's a good little find. So
definitely recommend.
You find yourself out in District 7, come and check it out.
Yeah, get out of the bubble.
And
they also specialize in craft beer as well. So if you're into craft beer, but also, your regular sort of Vietnamese beers as well, your lagers and stuff like that. So
if you want Bundaberg
soft drink.
If you're Aussie and looking for Bundaberg, it's here.
If you just want to come and have a quiet drink and watch others get slugged by these
balls.
Yeah,
we've got like at least six people right now in the cages.
We'll do some really cool B-rolls, like slow-mo B-rolls when people are trying to smack it or attempt to smack it, and they either do a quick like swing and a miss or they hit it on that sweet spot. I don't know. We'll find some B-rolls around that.
Like, we're going to insert it right here now.
Righto, guys, there's a quiz coming up, but before that, I want to know what sports you were into growing up. Andy... Huh. I know boxing has been a massive part of
your life.
Tell us a bit about it.
Well, I mean, I did it as a kid. And as a kid, you would do it because I got bullied. So that was really the reason. And then my brother did it. So then it kind of helped create that sibling rivalry between us. And then we got better at it. And, things kind of just moved on. And I competed and all this kind of stuff. And the good thing about it, and honestly, like, you know, the experience you get from doing sports, as you know as well, like you build discipline doing that, hopefully.
Not at my level.
But resilience as well, when you have to kind of push hard. And also like, ironically, like in a combat sport like boxing, you actually build teamwork because you also realize that it's not you're not the individual that, I mean, you're the individual that does it at the end of the day, but there's a whole bunch of people around
you. The coach.
The coach, right. The trainers, your other training partners who help you get to that point.
Mm. So did you belong to a team, like you had a sparring partner in your training group, your brother?
Yeah. So we had a team. And the great thing about it is I kind of took the initiative and I went to other gyms as well to train and spar. So you kind of build a camaraderie between other gyms as well. I know some places don't like that. I know some gyms, like, they prefer you not to, but I personally think that's a good thing to do, because if you're so used to fighting in your gym, you may dominate your own gym.
Yeah.
Once you get into competition, you're going to be deer in headlights. So if you're able to experience everything before the lights, then when it comes to hitting the lights, it's all just automatic. Like, you're not having to think about anything. And I think that's the thing about combat sports and any professional sports. Like, it's all the training that you do beforehand.
Yeah.
And then once you actually compete, it's just automatic.
Automatic.
Yeah.
It's just interesting though, because you keep saying it's a combat sport, but you actually came into it as a defensive mechanism for your situation as a kid.
Yeah.
Bullying.
Yeah.
And to beat the crap out of people. If
people
came to that.
People up. Yeah. No. But it was, I did it to stop bullying. I was getting bullied as a kid.
Mm.
And you know, I mean, we can talk about that on another kind of segment, but yeah, through that. But also, when you're 15, you're a little bit ill-disciplined as a child, and so I was really lucky to have like good role models in that gym, and then they've been able to kind of help me
structure
my life. Yeah. Otherwise, I think I would have just been a degenerate. Like, I would have just.
So sports is very important as a young person in your
being
experience.
Active.
Yeah,
being active.
But you didn't just do it to be fit, or it wasn't just a Tuesday or Wednesday night thing after school. You actually got to a pretty high level.
Yeah, but it started that way as well.
Okay.
It started as like, let me just learn. Let me just have something to do after school. Otherwise, I'm just going to run amok, right?
Like how high
Andy's
level?
Andy's being pretty humble. What, you were ranked...
Third
or fourth in Australia?
So for anyone who's like watching or listening, like I went to the level of wanting to compete in the Olympics because I thought it would be fun. And so I went to the
Olympics.
You've seen
fun.
All those condom advertisements and how many
condom?
Well, the stories about the Olympics each time they come around.
Oh,
there's always
a
story on how many condoms they
in
go
the
through
Olympic
in the village.
Village.
Yeah,
how
yeah.
many beds, how many beds thinking, get broken.
I was thinking about the chicken nuggets from Macca's, like at the Olympic Village more so than anything. I decided I wanted to compete in the Olympics because I thought it would be fun. And so I went through the Olympic trials and then went through that experience as well. Struggled, like pretty much geared my whole life towards it. Like finished uni as quick as I could.
How old were you when you stopped boxing professionally?
Well, when I stopped competing, it was about 23, 24. Oh. But I still stayed within the sport relative to it. So, you know, I also did stuff around like China boxing as well and been able to be a commissioner in China.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so when
that's when you met Manny Pacquiao.
Pacquiao. Yeah, so when I met Manny, so I got to walk Manny Pacquiao out. So if anyone is watching or listening, if you watch the fight that Manny Pacquiao walks out in, he only does two fights in China. But those two fights, you actually see
you
me walk
there.
Them out. Yeah.
Awesome.
And you don't look anything like the person you do now.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was wearing different glasses
at
that time.
You're less geeky looking.
Yeah.
You were in a suit, weren't you?
I was in a suit. I looked like a bodyguard. It was kind of cool.
Now, Mel, you're quite sporty. You're not a bad little runner.
No,
or you used to be.
Yeah.
But it was on the sidelines where you excelled. And I mean that in a nice way. I think 99% of us excel on the sidelines. But you were a beach volleyball announcer at one stage in the Philippines. Tell us about that.
Well, it was a University Open Beach Volley champion.
Wow.
Beach
that
volley
sounds like a college
tournament. So it was sponsored by a famous FMCG brand, and I was a commentator for the live event, but they also telecast that on TV. So that was, you know, you can't really see me on TV, but you can hear my voice, which is, you know,
it's kind of happening now.
Yeah. So yeah, I think I did that. I'm not sure. I can't remember now, but I think for like 3 summers. And it was also a chance to like go around the Philippines during the semifinals. So a specific university in, let's say, you know, Luzon, Visayas, or Mindanao, they would host the semifinals. And then we get to travel with the event company.
Yep.
And then the finals was always in Boracay Beach.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was something to look forward to. You know, I was working with my friends. We had like a 1 week beach holiday, all paid
sounds
for.
Sounds amazing.
And then all I needed to do was just like
is talking
talk.
To a mic.
Exactly.
Wow. Now, so, the Filipinos might kill me for saying this, but the Filipinos aren't overly tall.
Okay.
But beach volleyball and the Philippines, it's sort of...
Well, it's like basketball and the Philippines.
Yeah, well, that's another massive sport in the Philippines, isn't it?
But actually, the athletes from, if I remember correctly, they were a little bit tall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So beach volleyball, there's only like two in a team. And
Right. Yep.
So... You had to have the height and, you know, the build to, like, really run that sand. And sand is not very easy to run around in, you know, because it sinks. So when you're saying that we're kind of short, we become shorter because the sand, you know, like, it goes down.
Sinks
like,
you.
It'd
sinks
be a
you,
tough exactly. sport, I reckon.
Yeah.
Anything on the beach there, that's hard work.
But it wasn't hard work. I mean, for me. Yeah. I thought we were talking about me. But yeah, it was like, you know, it was pretty cool. But now looking back, I think that with all this hashtag MeToo movement going around, I do think that we subjected the female athletes to a different kind of, you know, like condition, you know. Right. They weren't really there to be seen for their athleticism, but... how nice they looked in skimpy bikini outfits. And, you know, looking back, I kind of feel, you know, confused
with
that.
I contributed,
you know, truth be told. I was always assigned to, like, interview the male athletes.
Yep.
And, you know, obviously there was a reverse male gaze.
Okay.
So.
Right.
So, okay. Yeah, right now... It had lots of fond memories,
but
looking back where we are right now, it is a bit confusing.
Well, you guys have done some really interesting things, so I was thinking I might skip over my sporting career.
tell us yours.
Okay, thanks for asking, but I'll just run through a couple of points. Growing up, tons of Aussie rules. I mean, like every kid in Victoria, pretty much, you wanted to play AFL. Aussie rules, AFL. Obviously, wasn't good enough at that. I was the captain of my local team, though, in the under-17s. Also not too bad. So they saw something in me that I didn't. Leadership qualities. And then, of course, you know, I had the obligatory career-ending injury that prevented me from making my way to the AFL.
What was your position?
I generally played, you know, sort of on the ball or
what
wing.
What is that?
You just sort of run around everywhere and try and get as many kicks as possible. So obviously no good. What else? During the summer, played a lot of tennis. So in country areas, it was either cricket or tennis in the summer. And then Aussie rules in the winter.
You had a tennis court in your backyard.
We had one. When I was growing up initially, it was dirt. So, you know.
No shoes.
The spring had come and then so you had to chip the
weeds. It was the Aussie clay court.
Yeah, it was actually. I actually cut my teeth on kind of clay. Gravel, I think it was.
Were you the Pat Cash of
I love
town?
Pat Cash. I even not of the town, probably of the little neighborhood. but I did at one stage when Pat Cash won Wimbledon, I think it was in 87.
Yeah.
I must admit I got Mum to make a couple of headbands.
Wow.
Like the checkered headbands.
Well, Mum didn't have dresses that were checkered. Yeah. She had some old dresses lying around and
curtains.
It was kind of almost like a tablecloth. And I can remember she cut some strips off an old dress and made me up a couple of headbands. So
I'm left-handed as well.
Oh. Back then, I would have been about 12 or 13. But yeah, lots and lots of tennis. I mean, in the summer, you always had a racket in your hand.
Yeah.
And I was the under-16 champion. So
name is in the clubhouse.
My name is on the board. So how about that? That's a bit of an effort. I quite like that. But that the tennis career sort of flopped as well. And I've always been a swimmer, so never competitively, but it's something I've taken up. As I've gotten older, you know, the impact is way less on the body. And actually, the swimming has meant that I joined the
the Ironman 70.3 in Da Nang a few years ago. I did the relay leg. So I did the swimming. And that's where I met our special guest today.
Yes.
Yeah. So that'll be good. So, yeah, looking forward to talking to him and catching up with him. This is the part of the episode we've been waiting for. You guys get to ask the questions now to our special guest, Tim Van Berkel, who's on the line from northern New South Wales in Australia. Tim is a professional triathlete who holds the distinction of being triathlon's youngest ever three-time Ironman distance champion. Tim grew up in the southern New South Wales Murray River border town of Albury and was destined to perhaps chase a career in the AFL or at least play Aussie rules at a high level. Tim turned professional at the age of 21 in 2007. He debuted at Ironman distance in the Australian Triathlon Championships soon after and finished seventh, automatically qualifying himself for the World Championship at Kona in Hawaii. Just for anyone listening who's not familiar with triathlon, of course, it consists of a swim leg, a bike leg, and a run leg. The distances vary depending on the type of race, but in general, there's Olympic distance, which is a 1.5 kilometer swim, a 40 kilometer ride, and a 10 kilometer run. There's also what's known as 70.3 or half Ironman distance, which is a 1.9 kilometer swim, a 90 kilometer ride, and a 21.9 kilometer run. That's where the 70.3 comes from. It's 70.3 miles. Then there's the full Ironman, which is double the half. So that's a 3.9 kilometer swim, a 180 kilometer ride, and a marathon, which is 42 kilometers. In 2014, Tim participated in the legendary Kona World Championships in Hawaii, the pinnacle of the sport, in which he came an amazing seventh after looking like potentially winning a podium finish, only to drop off the pace a little in the closing stages. Since then, he's participated in Ironman 70.3 Vietnam on a number of occasions, winning it once and coming second twice. Tim Van Berkel, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, no worries. Good to catch up again, Matt.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. So I'll lead off. I think we've all got a few questions for you. So I think firstly, it would be good to tell us how you got into the sport of triathlon, because you grew up in southern New South Wales on the Murray River in the town of Albury, not too far from where I grew up in the Murray Valley. And I know that Albury Wodonga is a massive Aussie rules area. So what dragged you away from playing Aussie rules?
Well, basically, I was not very good at football. So I would play footy in the wintertime, and then I would, like, do, like, triathlon in the summertime. But it was, like, it was just, like, a lot of running, swimming, riding with mates. And then I kind of realised I had a little bit of talent at it. I couldn't swim to save myself, but I could ride and run okay. And then I started entering in a few races, and I started going all right, and then I just, like, fully committed to triathlon, and it just took off from there. But basically, I was playing football. I wasn't very good, and then I would do triathlon to keep fit for footy.
Yeah, right. Okay, so you've been following the summers around the world for almost 20 years now, I think. Would that be right, about 20 years?
About 15 years.
And competing at the highest level in triathlon, was staying home for the past 2 years a shock to the system?
Look, yes and no. It sucks not being able to travel and race, because racing is a big part of the way I make an income, and you know, keeping my sponsorship is, you know, traveling overseas, getting results, et cetera, et cetera. So that really took a massive hit, and I lost a lot of income from racing, and I've lost a lot of sponsorship. But to staying home, spending all this time with my little fella has been amazing.
Yeah.
I've got to experience my backyard a lot more, hang out with mates, doing different things. Like, I've been doing a lot of, like, gravel riding, mountain biking. So that's been cool. And just really spending quality time with my little fella has just been amazing. Like, it's just, we just had a ball during COVID. So there's plus sides and negatives of it. But,
So you'd have...
Financially, it hurt. Yeah. It was just good to be with the fam.
Yeah. So, Tim... Sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry, Mel. You go.
So, yeah, I would just want to pick up from what you mentioned about your sponsorships. So how is it like now? Like now that, you know... finally, hopefully, we're, you know, getting over COVID. How do the brands, are they becoming more active? Is there more interest in, you know, supporting athletes like you in the sport? How's the marketing and advertising situation at the moment for athletes?
Yeah, look, I've been lucky compared to some athletes. Like, a lot of my, I did get a lot of pay cuts, but a lot of my big sponsors still stuck by me during COVID, which was really great. Basically, I haven't really got to race a lot the last 2 years. I have a little bit in Australia, but I reckon I did 3 races last year, and then I think I've done 3 this year, and hoping to do 2 more before the year's out. Mm. But yeah, it's been tough. But as I said, once we get back racing and get traveling again, I think things will pick up again. But, you know, a lot of the industries like the bike industry have just been going gangbusters because everyone's just getting into cycling. The same with the fitness industry gym equipment and stuff like that. Because everyone's doing it from home now. So all businesses like that has just gone skyrocketed. But for us athletes, it's been tough. But, you know, back in the States and Europe, everything's just gone back to normal and there's been heaps of racing. But to try to get over to the States is just a nightmare. Like, to get a plane ticket was like 20 grand return. Then you got to do hotel quarantine on the way home, which is another 4 grand. And it was all a bit too much. So, you know, Australia's starting to get back on track. The country's getting double vaccinated and things are starting to open up now. So hopefully it'll be business as usual going into next year.
Yeah, so Tim, just jumping in, like you just kind of mentioned the mentality part of it, like, you know, the costs associated with it. In your mindset, like when you prepare yourself mentally and physically for an event, do you typically plan like 8 to 6 weeks beforehand, like with your training camps, to get in shape, and both from your body perspective and your mind perspective?
Yeah, look, it depends really on what day, like what time of the year it is. Like at the start of the year, I always have a good off season during Christmas and enjoy Christmas. And then I start to build again for the following year. And then if I like build up to a key race for like Ironman Australia, yeah, I usually use like a 6 to 8 week Ironman block to prepare. And then like you have like 2 weeks easy going into an Ironman, and then you do an Ironman, and then you have like a long rest period after like a week or two of not much really. And then, but I'm actually preparing for an Ironman now, and the build I'm doing is like 3 week build, but I've already got a good base of fitness there. So I decided that I could get to this race. So I've just done like a short 3 week period, but, to get through mentally. Yeah. I do a lot of visualization of like races, but I do a lot like race week. When it's like you get into race week, you get to the destination, you know, you study the course and stuff like that. That's when I really start to hone in the mental side of racing.
Wow.
And but during the build for it, it's just training really, and just trying to stay healthy, injury free, and just tripping away training.
Yeah. And just as a follow-up, because you've been doing it for so long, how has training changed over the years for you?
Yeah, definitely. Over the years, I've been doing it for 15 years now, and it's a very more scientific now. I train to from like back when I started. Like when I started, there wasn't power meters. We basically did a little bit to heart rate, but not much. But it was just a very old school train to feel kind of thing. But now, like, you know, you upload your data to Training Peaks, you analyze it, you use power meters, heart rate. Like, it's a very scientific approach we use now. I use this thing called a Whoop strap, which is on my wrist, and it monitors, like...
That's great.
My HRV, my sleep, my recovery, my training stress. Mm. So, yeah, a lot of scientific goes into it, a lot of gadgets and stuff like that.
That's like a wearable tech, right? It's you can download an app and everything.
You download an app, you wear it on your wrist all the time, you sleep with it, you train with it, and it monitors your sleep, tells you how much deep sleep you get, how much REM sleep you get, how many times, how many disturbances during the night, and tells you how, like your HRV, it measures that, and then for your sessions, it will monitor all your sessions and give you data for that, and gives you a training stress score, and yeah, it's really interesting. It's helped me from like, help me stop overtraining. I can, it'll tell me when I'm like getting sick and stuff like that. So it's a really good tool to just to manage all that stuff.
So you're a wizard in analytics these days. Hey, that could be a job after your career.
Well, look, I use it as a guide. I'm not like, I don't study it too hard, but it's just a nice little guide there just to look like. One day I'll wake up and I'm like, oh, I feel a bit tired today. And then I'll download my data from my Whoop and my HRV is low and I'm a bit tired. So I know to take it a bit easier that day.
Yep. So you've raced all the major triathlon events around the world, including Kona a number of times now. Where would you rank Ironman 70.3 Vietnam among all those races?
Oh, look, I love that race. It's such a cool race, and Bang and the team do such an amazing job. I've done Vietnam, I'm going to say, 4 or 5 times now.
Wow.
Right.
The last, I won it in 2017, and the last time I did it was the Asia Pacific 70.3 champs, and I was second. It's just a great vibe. I really love the Vietnamese culture. I really enjoy my time in Vietnam, and that hot, fast racing kind of suits me. So I've always kind of done there. I think my worst result there has been a third, I think. So I've always been in the top three. So it's definitely conditions that suit me. And, I definitely rate it up there. It's probably one of my favourite races, and hope to get back to Da Nang next year.
Does the race actually have anything unique about it that you could sort of say, you know, you've got to go to this race for this particular feature? You know, obviously Kona is the world championship, so I mean that's the pinnacle of of your sport, I'm guessing that there are plenty of Australian races that have these sort of unique features about them. What would it be in Da Nang?
I think like it's just a race, you race in paradise, like it's at a beautiful resort where we stay, the everything's there, like all the athletes are having breakfast together, you know, you've got that beautiful ocean swim, and then you've got the ride through Da Nang there, through the city. It's just spectacular. And then that run along the beachfront there, it's just racing in paradise. So, and then you get to have a nice holiday after it. It makes sense.
Yeah, so Tim, obviously, you're like one of the elite athletes of triathlon. And, you know, ordinary people like us, like me, you know, we think that, oh, wow, getting into triathlons is going to be tough, you know, especially if it might even seem unattainable to beginners. And so how do you think, in your opinion, can the triathlon sport organizers or, you know, the brands that sell merchandise for triathletes, how can they communicate to weekend warriors that, you know, hey, give triathlon a try?
Yeah, look, I think Ironman do a very good job of that because it's a sport that really attracts the amateurs, it really attracts the weekend warriors because, like, anyone can go do like a triathlon or race Kona or race Vietnam and race the same day with the best in the world on the same course. Like, I can't go down and play tennis with Pat Rafter or anything like that.
True.
Or I don't know who's the best, Djokovic or like a tennis player like that. But triathlon, you can go race the same course as Jan Frodeno and race on the same day. So I think it really does attract the weekend warrior. And the Ironman, the brand, it's got this reputation of, it's such a big achievement to actually complete one of these things.
Yep.
Like, you go to an Ironman anywhere around the world, and I'll guarantee you that the last place finisher who just finishes just under the 17-hour mark gets more of a cheer than the guy that actually wins the race.
Yeah,
bragging rights.
No,
it's true.
Yeah.
Like, even though these guys, it's such a huge achievement, and it's like a big family, and they really like get behind and support it. And I reckon it is a very much an amateur sport. Yeah, there's a small like field, pro field in each race, but it is very it attracts the weekend warrior, that's for sure.
Interesting. What's your best time for Kona?
My best time in Hawaii I've gone 8:13.
Wow. And there's people who do it in 17.
I sleep for 8 hours, Tim.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do it.
Honestly, the race day itself, it goes really quick and it's not too bad. What I struggle with is trainers for the thing. At the moment, I'm in the middle of a... By the time the week's out, I would have done like 28 to 29 hours of training for the week, and I'm absolutely just tired. I'm fatigued. I'm sore. Yep. I'm hungry. Yep. I've got this like full Ironman brain fog going on where I just can't even see straight sometimes.
Right.
And I'm like, I've just got short fuse with my son. Like it just sucks. And I'm not pleasant to be around when I'm during an Ironman block. So I don't enjoy the training for it, but I really enjoy the race day. And when you cross that line and you do well, it's all really worthwhile. And
it sounds like a lot of fun. So. I don't think I'll be doing one anytime soon.
It sucks. As I said, the race day is awesome. It's a great day.
Now, Tim, I've been given the last question for the day, and arguably it's the most important.
Mm-hmm.
Now, presumably you're reaching another milestone soon. You know, triathlon's all about numbers and all that sort of stuff, and that would be your 40th birthday. That must be coming up soon.
Happy birthday.
It's still a few years off.
But you're getting close. So,
I only just turned 37. About
the same as Andy.
Yeah,
really?
Same as me. Yeah.
Is it on your mind? Is it something that's there, or is it just a number, or is it something as a pro athlete you think about?
Honestly, like I feel the best I've ever felt. I feel like I'm really fit. I'm really strong. I'm probably the mentally. The best I've ever been in my whole career.
Awesome.
It's just COVID hit and I can't race and it's just been hard. So, like, I'm fit and I'm raring to go and I'm dropping to race. I just every race I prepare for gets cancelled or postponed.
Yeah,
so,
right.
But yeah, like, next year will be interesting. I've got 2 more years on some contracts that should be enough to keep me going. So, I'm really pumped to really give it a good crack the next couple of years. But, I can kind of feel like some of my sponsors maybe feel like I'm getting old and that it might be time to retire. I've kind of got that vibe off a couple of them. But, look, I feel good. I'll give it a red hot crack the next 2 years and see what we can do.
Awesome.
Hope to see you in Vietnam soon.
Yeah, hope to see you soon. Thanks heaps for joining us.
See you soon, guys. Yeah, no worries.
And definitely keep in touch.
Thank you very
especially
much.
Now that things are opening up. And we'll have a beer in your honour. Once we've finished with our podcast.
Awesome. Enjoy.
All right. Thanks, heaps, man.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me.
See ya.
Bye. Have a good night.
Have a good day. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
See ya.
I'm in the big leagues. Told them don't miss me. Ballin' like Houston. Ayy, feeling like Whitney. I need a bag, bruh. Send it through quickly. I'm making his dog. Like I'm in the big leagues. Told him that I gotta go, dog.
Okay, so there you have it. That was Tim Van Berkel.
Wow. Thanks, Tim.
That's really good.
Yeah, it was good to have someone on for a change. We don't really interview too many people.
No.
And I think we should do more of it. He's an interesting guy and great athlete.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should see him run, man.
Really?
He's a freak. Yeah.
So his running is like my sprinting.
He's got his numbers on his website, you know, his sort of best speeds and stuff like that. And I don't know, it's something like it. I don't know, two minute K or
something,
2.5, I don't know, maybe even less.
I can't do the maths,
but I know he's quick.
Wow. Yeah, I think incredible. The fastest I've done per kilometre is like 5 minutes, and that's me going hard.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, but I normally average at about like 5.5, 6 max.
That's still fast.
And keep in mind that he's done a swim and a bike
as well.
Because the running is the last bit, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know how they do it. Hey, anyway, let's wrap up the show with our final segment, hey?
Yeah?
We just wanted to talk about some unusual or sort of uncommon or kind of unique sports in Vietnam.
Okay.
Yeah?
So when you say unique, it's like not as popular in the rest of the world.
Yeah, not that well known, I suppose. Okay. So I think we all agree that soccer or football is the unofficial sport of Vietnam, right? It's massive.
Yeah.
Absolutely
all the time.
Massive. Yeah. The French brought it here when they turned up, causing all their trouble. And while the French left, the round ball game hasn't. It hung around.
Yeah.
So the men's team is currently ranked way out there in 98th position in the FIFA World Rankings. So, you know, probably middle of the road globally, I suppose. Meanwhile, the women's team, I was interested to find out, is ranked at number 32.
Oof. You go, girl.
Yeah, making them the highest ranked ASEAN nation. And the under-23 men's team is ranked around number 8 in Asia.
Wow.
That's
which is a huge
amazing.
Effort.
Yeah.
So up-and-coming nation in the football world for sure. But when the national teams aren't playing, it's the English Premier League that everyone's watching. It's massive. Just about everyone has a Man U top or whatever else.
Yeah.
Stickers, on their motorbikes and
Yep. So
helmets.
It doesn't...
The helmets.
Yeah, the helmets.
I know.
I didn't know Man U Footy Club made helmets.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter where you go. There's always a football replay on. You probably go to the gym, Andy, and the security guard sitting there watching a replay from the night before.
Yeah, whilst Vina music is playing in the background.
So I don't know if we should mention this. You can cut it anytime, but football betting.
Oh, yeah.
It's like online betting.
Well, technically, it's illegal.
It's illegal.
Yeah,
it's illegal.
Technically,
I know
it's
nothing
illegal.
About it.
Yeah, yeah.
We know nothing.
We know nothing about it.
Yeah.
No. Moving on.
But yeah, it's as you can tell, it's super popular. And by the way, the National Futsal Championship is underway at the moment, just over here in District 8.
Yeah.
They've had to postpone it because of COVID. They're worried about that. So,
yeah, they just started, right?
Yeah, this week or last, something like that, yeah.
You can't believe, the futsal ball is super hard.
I don't think
dense.
I've ever seen one.
You don't want to get hit by one. It's super dense. It's small, and it's just dense.
Right.
Futsal is indoor. It's indoors, right?
Yeah, you're right.
With the fake turf.
Yeah,
I think so. It's like this rebound concrete kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, obviously football's an imported game. Does Vietnam have its own sport? Well, it does. It actually has its own martial art called Võ Việt Nam. And I actually tried to get a local proponent of it on today, but none of them were confident enough to come on and speak English.
Mm.
So hopefully in the future we could get someone on. Võ Việt Nam was founded in 1938, and I don't know much about it.
They've got blue uniforms. That's what I know.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure if that's just a sort of a club thing or a national team color or what?
I think most of them wear the blue jersey.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. But maybe different color belts.
Yep.
But the actual overall is blue.
And actually one of them might be sharpening their knives out the back by the sound of it.
Oh, the axle grinder's back.
Because Võ Việt Nam is practiced both with and without weapons.
Huh?
The weapons include swords, knives, chisels.
Wow.
I don't know what you'd use. Why a chisel.
How does one have a chisel in their drawer?
How about sticks?
The Filipino one, right?
Oh, yeah. Arnis or something.
Don't upset your builder. When you get a builder around, guys, the hot tip is it could be a Võ Việt Nam specialist.
Expert. Yeah, it could be a grandmaster. Yeah. We don't know about it.
And they probably use motorcycle helmets as well. and the sport, the activity... it's based on the principle of hard and soft, which means training the body as well as the mind, which you would probably understand more about, Andy. Techniques for attacking and defending are trained and can include wrestling. So it's
like a mixed martial arts.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like that,
doesn't it? Yeah, it kind of does. But the videos I've seen, it's mostly stand-up from what I see.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe because... the stuff that I see is more sports, like it's not you know how like when a martial art evolves to become more of a sport mm-hmm. rather than a like self-defense type of element, they add rules in, right? Which is right. totally against what happens in a street fight or sure. defensive fight.
Okay. Yeah.
So when they add rules in, it changes the style, changes the way people approach things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so is Vovinam considered the national sport though?
I'm not too sure if it's actually the sport, no. but it was invented here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I've got a little trivia. Ooh. And yeah, so did you guys know that since Vietnam started to join the Olympics in 1952, they've only won like 5 medals?
Okay. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So 2 medals in shooting, and one of them was a gold medal
oh,
in
wow.
the 2016 Rio
wow,
Games.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So 2 medals in shooting, 1 medal in taekwondo. Right.
Nice. Okay.
And 2 in weightlifting.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I was thinking if your country is like medaled in weightlifting and shooting, is there like a rule where you can change your national sport to elevate the sport that your citizens are really good in? And then, oh, yeah, our national sport is shooting.
Mm. No, I just thought a national sport would be sort of native to the country, right? Wouldn't it?
Not really. I mean, what is rugby native to New Zealand?
Is that okay, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, true. Okay.
I think it's just a sport that majority of people play, yeah, whether or not they're good yeah. or not.
Or they know, meddled yeah. in the Olympics or something.
Yeah. Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, at least Vovinam was actually invented here, but it looks as though that it's brought in a whole lot of the other disciplines and it's this hybrid form of martial arts here.
So I knew that this segment was coming up, so I actually, you know, aside from Googling the medal count of Vietnam in the Olympics, there is a native sport that is considered the national sport. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly. It's Dacau.
Ah.
D-A-C-A-U.
Ah.
Yeah. So...
Is it the one with the...
It's like... Okay, so if you go down the parks around the city, it's like foot volleyball or foot badminton.
Okay, yeah.
So you kick around a little shuttlecock with a feather.
Right.
But
it's
not a badminton shuttlecock.
Yeah, it looks right. a bit like one though.
It has like a spring.
Yeah.
yeah
so
yeah.
it has a spring, it has feathers, and then you can only use your hands, your elbows, your knees, your foot, or your head.
Yep. Yeah, it sounds like it's a little bit like the Thai
hacky sack.
One. Oh, yeah, hacky sack as well.
Yeah, that's right.
And the Thai one, takraw, I think yeah. it's called. Oh. And it looks like the name of this is borrowed from that as well.
Yeah.
What is it? Dacau.
In the Philippines, we call it SIPA, S-I-P-A. Okay. But actually, like a lot of Southeast Asian countries, like Singapore, Thailand, Malaysia, I think they standardized this sport. And
right.
now it's called sepak takraw.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, all over Asia, Southeast Asia, East, China, Japan, they all have like a version yeah. of this sport.
Yeah, I wonder where it started. Be interesting to find out.
I think China. Everything started in
yeah,
China.
Yeah, everyone's from China, right? No, but I think it's just something that just naturally evolves, right? You have something that's round
yeah.
and then people want to be like, oh,
you just
want to
kick
on it. Yeah, and then it's like, hey, how about if I kick it this way? And then, you yeah. know, and then
I can
evolves.
Imagine
yeah.
the first yeah. caveman is
yeah,
like,
exactly. yeah.
hey, ball, yeah. ball, ooh, ball.
What about you, Andy? What do you got? You got anything else?
Yeah, I mean, not really a Vietnamese sport, right? But it's along the lines of passion, right? And so, like last month, Vietnam had their first legitimate boxing world champion, right?
Yeah.
Which is crazy given the fact that Vietnam always talks about football. And I'm like, mate, let's be real. You're ranked like barely in the top 100.
98.
Yeah. You know, you have a population of 100 million, you're still ranked at 98. Granted though, like the system is getting better.
Sure,
like,
sure.
Like the system, it all comes back down to a system. At the end of the day, so you got to have good coaches, good facilities and stuff, and then promote
training,
a good league,
yeah.
domestic league to kind of help promote. I get
a budget.
That. Yeah, I get that. But you have boxing, which is like Vietnam is a very proud nation. I think a lot of Southeast Asian nations, we're very proud.
Mm-hmm.
We can fight, right? So the Philippines is one. Yeah. Korea was, Japan was back in the day. Mm-hmm. I mean, Japan still is, to be honest. And so Vietnam is rising up. And so Vietnam actually has their first world champion. It was last month, man or woman, and it's a legitimate world champion. So in the sport of boxing, there's about like 20 or so alphabet little titles.
There's the women boxing team. I think they're set to participate two boxing athletes like next in December or something. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, well, yeah, because with the boxing, right, you've got all these like things that are happening. And right now, like there's only four world titles that they've recognized, four organizations that they've recognized. And Vietnam holds one of them, one of the four. And it was in her fifth professional fight.
Wow.
She took on the defending champion who was Japanese and she was able to beat her. And I think that's an amazing feat that no one really knows about whatsoever. And oddly enough, she's actually from District 7. Her gym is actually from District 7. So a big shout out to them. So her name is, if you're wondering, her name is Win T Tu Ni, right? And so she defeated Atsura Takada for the WBO title. And that was like only in her fifth fight, like I said.
Wow.
But mixed martial art is also something that's rising. So we're talking about martial arts, right?
Is this MMA?
This is MMA, mixed martial arts. Mm-hmm. And so here in Asia, you got ONE FC, which is basically the UFC, but really in Asia. It's not as big as the UFC, but it's essentially like the biggest mixed martial arts promotional company in this part of the world. And like back in 2019, just before COVID locked everyone out, Ho Chi Minh City actually hosted a ONE FC tournament, which is really cool.
Yeah,
and so we, you know, there's a few Vietnamese nationals that actually compete in ONE FC. One of them being B Win. She's American Vietnamese, so she was competing in that. But Australia also has some like Australian Vietnamese.
I just noticed you're like, okay, women. So
what about it?
Would it be fair to say that the women athletes in Vietnam are doing better than the male counterparts?
Really?
No, just you know, with the statistics that you're, you know.
Sounds a bit like it, doesn't it?
Sounds like it,
But, I mean, the swimmers are good too, the female swimmers.
Yeah. There was a
young lady from Kunta.
She wanted to retire, right? Yeah. Well, she asked to retire, which is kind of funny. Can I have permission to retire so I can have a normal life?
Yeah, I think she runs a swimming school now.
Yeah.
Somewhere over, not too far away. I contacted her, but didn't hear back. A bit busy, I think. But she's an amazing swimmer. And I think she did well in the Olympics. Wow. So she's that level. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, but like to finish off what I'm saying,
sure,
right?
Sure.
So ONE FC, you've got this amazing fighter called Man, oddly, the Situation.
Oh,
that's his stage name.
Cool.
It's kind of cool. But you know what? Like in the UFC, we talk about double world champions. In ONE FC, he was the first double weight like world champion. Mm. So basically, he was the champion both weights at the same time.
Can you do that?
Yeah, you can do that. So long as you defend it, you should be okay. And so he's double world champion. He's the first in that organization to do it. And he's Vietnamese as well. And the fact that people don't really talk about him is kind of crazy. You also have like another Vietnamese fighter who fights in the UFC, you know, and UFC is the pinnacle when it comes to MMA.
They're based here?
They're obviously traveling. They're traveling, but they're Vietnamese heritage. They actually, you know, oddly enough, do come from Australia. They do live in Australia, but they're Vietnamese heritage and they're really proud of that heritage as well. And we should celebrate that.
Yeah.
We should know more about that. I can't wait.
We should try and get them on actually.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I can't wait for like all the sporting events to, you know, to get back on track.
Well, it's good to just go along as well. Yeah. It's like, just like with what Tim was saying with the Ironman up there in Da Nang. Even if you're not participating, you just get involved in the weekend. Yeah. It's a fun weekend.
Yeah, like a tournament. Like any tournament is actually fun. Like a boxing tournament, jiu-jitsu tournament. Like Vietnam actually has some really good jiu-jitsu fighters, right? Which is crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Like I think we just had a few that actually competed in the world championships and they were able to medal in it. But, you know, these things happen and football kind of dominates.
Yeah, it does.
Fine.
It does.
So do you guys want to like put a bet? Like will baseball become like the next big thing in local sports?
Well, I guess if they put cages in every guanyao around the city,
because plenty of people go to those. So if you can sit down like you can here and just, you know, have a few beers and then
hit
20 balls every now and then.
Put the baseball on a massive TV.
Yeah. I mean, billiards is huge here.
And in the Philippines as
Yeah, so they have an ability to pick up a sport and run with it. So see why not.
Yeah.
I mean, you got 100 million. So like you have the population really. You just need the time to be quite honest. Like baseball is such a new thing here in this country. Like, yeah, you just need the time.
Those things grow quickly. Like, cycling is getting big now.
Yeah.
Oh, jogging.
Road racing,
the running.
Jogging. Yeah. You know, when I came here in 2010, no one really jogged.
How do they get around?
Well, no one did that sort of business. You know, it's an indicator of how the economy's grown and developed, that people have more time and more money to follow these sorts of pursuits.
Yeah,
no one jogged. People still did, you know, the Vietnamese obviously, as you know, have always exercised.
In the morning.
It's been an important part of life.
Right.
But it wasn't until probably 5 or 6 years ago that you would see actually people out running in running gear.
Wow.
For fitness.
But also, you know, I think because of the last 2 years with COVID, the mentality of people in general is more about healthy living, healthy lifestyle. So, watch out for more sports.
And they love the gear.
Yeah.
They love getting the gear. You know, like with triathlon as an example.
The matchy.
You've got three sports.
You mean the active wear?
Yeah.
That's just
the
wear.
Yeah.
Is that what you
call
it?
The active wear.
The active wear. The ladies, what they wear.
The running gear, the bicycle.
The knee socks up to here.
All right.
They love showing it off.
Yeah. They like the aerodynamism.
Yeah.
Oh, and the wearable tech. You know, these things that you put here and while you're jogging.
Oh, just make all this talk just makes me want to go and have a beer. So I think that's just about the full time buzzer for the episode, guys. Bow, bow. I don't have a buzzer. Hey, did it pump you up?
Yeah.
You want to hit the cages?
Sure, let's do it.
Sure. But no. I just got my nails done.
Spirit fingers.
And I'm injured, so it'll be just you.
Just me.
Before we do go and hit those cages, I'd like to thank our special guest, Tim Van Berkel,
for taking the time
to chat with us today. I'd also like to thank the team at Baseball Cage here in District 7.
Yeah.
Thank you
for allowing us. Special shout out to Abby.
Yeah,
thanks, Abby.
Set up here. It's an awesome venue.
Yeah,
make sure
definitely.
You pop in and try out cages, and it's in District 7.
District 7. Out of the bubble.
And
everything's happening
in District
7. I
just want to say, FYI, this wasn't a sponsored episode. We just liked the place and wanted to do one here.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean we're not open to so-called sponsored collabs. If you own a venue and would like us to do a show at your location, get in touch to work something out. We just had a few sort of audio issues with the angle grinder,
but that's the beauty of doing it live.
Yeah,
right.
True.
Exactly.
So anyway, get in touch to work something out if you'd like us to come and visit your venue. Thank you, Mel and Andy, for being part
thank
of
you.
All this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you'd like to follow Mel on Instagram, you'll find her at Melanie Castle. Likewise for Andy, check him out on Instagram and Facebook at Andrew Tran Digital, and check out his website, andrewtran.asia, for how Andy can help you with all your marketing needs. And most importantly, thank you for listening and watching today. Our podcast is growing, and I'd say we're batting well above average.
Yeah.
Oh, snap.
Good stats.
If you're listening on Spotify, be sure to
scroll. The bases are loaded.
Be sure to scroll past the show notes after you've read them, of course, and answer the questions we have there for you. We love hearing what you think. Alternatively, visit our website, thebureauasia.com, or engage with us on Facebook and Instagram. We're at YouTube.
At the Bureau Asia.